My goals in my life are to be a good father, to be... Fuck you.
Get loud right past his home, Ben Carroll!
So the reason I'm single...
Yeah, we know that.
Yeah, because your wife stopped fucking me for free.
You guys ready to see your headline tonight?
Be like the exhibits at a pro-choice rally or something.
Welcome to stage the very funny Vince
Carone. Hello and welcome to Peek Behind the Curtain. My name is Vince Carone and I appreciate you tuning into this podcast. If you are a regular listener, welcome back. And if this is your first time, you are in for a treat. That may not be true, but I don't know how else to say it other than, hey, welcome to my podcast. I'm an 18-year veteran comedian out of the Chicagoland area. I've toured the country, and I've got a bunch of stories from 18 years of being on the road that I share with you and give you a look at what it's like behind the scenes as a stand-up comedian. So I walk you through, and I don't hold anything back, and I will gladly tell you about all my successes and, more importantly, all my failures that have happened in the business along the way. If you want to know more about me, please go to my website at VinceCarone.com or subscribe to me on social media. I'm on all platforms at Vince Carone. Most importantly, on my website, sign up for my mailing list. That's how I let you know when I'm coming to perform live in your area. I'm a ranting lunatic on stage. You don't want to miss a live show. That's where all the fun happens. So make sure you sign up for my mailing list and find out when I'll be back by you. Let's talk about what I've been up to this past week before we dive into this week's topic. So this past week was New Year's, and so we had New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, and it was I've got two kids, so for me, you know, it means like a 5 o'clock dinner on New Year's Eve with some friends, and then my kids wanting to stay up later than me on New Year's Eve. But my son made it till midnight. I barely made it till midnight, but we did that, and then New Year's Day hit, and New Year's Day is a day that everybody says, you know, let's get back into it. Here's my new goals. Here's my resolutions. Here's what I want to do. And my wife and I said, let's fucking have some Luminati's pizza, and then we'll start setting some goals after that. And but we did. I did set some goals for this year for comedy of what I want to do. And more importantly, I reflected on some goals that I hit from last year. And I've got a nice blog about it on my website. Go to VinceCarone.com. Check out my blog, and you can see what my top five accomplishments were from 2019. And there's some behind the curtain stuff there as well to give you a little bit of insight on that. The big news for Illinois was that Illinois legalized marijuana as of January 1st. So on New Year's Day, while everybody's resolving to quit drinking, I'm going dry January, they stood outside in line for 3-4 hours on end to make sure they can get and go buy legalized marijuana. And for me, I'm not a big pot smoker. It's not my thing, but I'm glad that it is legal now in the state of Illinois, because it's a fucking plant when you can go to the store and buy turmeric off the shelf and you don't even know what the fuck that is, but some guy in a white coat told you to go buy it, so you did. I think you should be able to buy marijuana on the spice rack. And it's kind of funny that Illinois is now allowing the legalization of weed and allowing the sale of marijuana, because Illinois is one of the brokest states in the country, and they're one of the first 11 states to legalize marijuana. So what do you do when you're broke and you need money? You sell drugs. I'm pretty sure that's what everybody that's in jail doing marijuana-related charges is in there for to begin with. And Illinois just finally pardoned all those people. And so now, marijuana-related charges are being dropped off records, and people that were in jail serving marijuana-related charges are now being released from prison, which is good. And that's what should happen, because it's a fucking plant. We shouldn't have to pay tax dollar money to imprison somebody for fucking smoking a plant. If you went out in your backyard and you ripped a dandelion out of your yard and put it into a piece of paper and smoked it, a cop would call you a fucking idiot. But marijuana, because it makes you feel happy and it can make you hungry again if you're on chemo and all the other benefits of it to where it's somebody else's body, so you shouldn't give a shit. I'm glad it's legal. But now there's a big outrage going on right now across the country as well, because a lot of our citrus farms down in Florida are turning over to marijuana fields. And there's a big worry and concern that we're not going to be able to get our citrus from Florida anymore. And we're going to have to go to Mexico to get our citrus, which is kind of funny if you think about it, because that's where we used to go to get our drugs. So that's a nice juxtaposition there. So we'll just every couple of years, we'll switch off. We'll sell the fruit for a while. Mexico, you sell the drugs. And then, you know, when the patent runs out, you sell the fruit and then we'll sell the drugs. So that's what's been going on in Illinois, and I'm glad it's legal now. And there's more to that. I talk about that on stage now a little bit, but so does every single comic in the Illinois area right now. So it's a hot button, and the jokes are getting old real fast. So I had to sneak mine in on this podcast here. Last night, on Sunday night, I did a show in Evanston, Illinois, and the show is called Wild West Comedy Show, put on by a funny comedian named John McCombs and a few others. And John invited me out to do an 8 to 10 minute set on a Sunday night. So I showed up, and there was probably two people in the room. It's probably a 15 by 15 room when you walk in, maybe somewhere around there. I'm not really good with measurements, but there's a couple people in there when I walked in. And then as the show started, the room started to fill up a little bit more. And it was just a fun hodgepodge group of comics, each doing 8 to 10 minutes. The crowd was chatty. They were chatting with the comedians on stage. There was a federal criminal defense lawyer in the crowd. And I've got a new piece of material that I've been working on about Lori Loughlin being on trial for college bribery. And it's one of my stronger pieces right now. And I wanted to do it last night. And I had him as a checkpoint in the audience. So I told him up front, like, hey, after the show, the key words being after the show here, I want you to talk to me and let me know where I'm wrong in my bit and my argument. And so when I made my points about why she shouldn't go to jail, I looked at him and I said, you know, as a federal criminal defense lawyer, you know, am I right? And he was like, well... And he kind of delayed, and I cut him off, and I said, that's way too fucking long of an answer. As a defense lawyer, that objection would have been overruled because you took too long to get to the point. And the crowd laughed, and we had a good time, and it was just it was a fun show, just catching up with everybody. So last night I did 8 to 10 minutes. I think I finished off about 8.5 minutes, and none of it was on my previous album. So again, I'm hitting it hard right away, working on new material right away, and that's my goal, is to turn over the material quickly. So when I start traveling and going on tour again this year and going back to places I was at last year, I have a new act to come out there with. So that's what's going on in my world. Make sure you check out my schedule online, vincecarone.com. Sign up for my mailing list. Go there, do it right now. Pause this podcast. Go sign up for my mailing list. You won't regret it. I promise. I'm funny. I promise. I don't spam you. I fucking hate getting spammed through email. And if you need any more motivation, know that I'm often forgetful and lazy. So I won't even email you as much as I plan on doing, as my goal setting was for this year. I'm going to send out one newsletter every week, and I'm sure I'll fuck that up very fast. So get on there. It's low risk, high reward to you. Let's dive into this week's topic. This week is called The Album That Never Was. And if I don't see good traction on this podcast, I will change the name to a different title that might get more traction. So I reserve the right to do that. But right now it's called The Album That Never Was. So we're not going to spend a lot of time on this today, but I just wanted to give you a brief story here. Let me set the stage. In December of 2009, I recorded an album called Thanks for the Clap, and it was my sophomore album, my second album, and I felt pretty good about it at the time. You know, I would be embarrassed to listen to it now, but I felt pretty good about it at the time. But in 2010, in January of 2010, I was at the height of getting booked. I wasn't married. I didn't have kids, and so I was able to hit the road constantly and just live my life on the road for a while. And I was getting booked all over, so I was able to immediately in January of 2010 start working on new material. And as the year started to progress, I had the same mentality I have now. Turn over the material. You're going back to places that have seen you before. Give them something new. And that's what I bring to the stage, a high energy act full of a ton of material. And people come back and see me often when I go to places because they know they're going to get a bunch of new rants from me. In August of 2010, I was performing at Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle. I headlined there for the first time, and I came back. I had a great weekend out there, and I came back, and it was a Sunday. It was a Sunday morning. I was in I was still living with my parents at the time, and I was making guacamole, and there's a trick when you're making guacamole. There's a trick to get the pit out of the avocado. If you slam a knife into the pit, it pops the pit right out of it. And and my now wife Tiffany had taught me this trick. And I took like this monstrous knife, like an equivalent of like a butcher knife, to get the pit out. And my mom was sitting there, and she's like, "Hey, maybe you should use a smaller knife." I'm like, "Don't tell me what to do. I know what the fuck I'm doing." And I lifted it so high and swung it down so hard, and the avocado twisted and took a turn and chopped off a chunk of my left thumb, and it went flying across the counter, and I immediately tucked my thumb into my hand, was holding it like, "Holy shit, please tell me I did not just fucking do that." And then I run it underwater real quick, and I see, you know, a big chunk of my thumb is missing, and I start panicking. So I go to the emergency room, and I brought my thumb on ice because I didn't know what else to do with it. And I'm sitting there in the emergency room, where I had to just sit there just in pain, with paper towels clotting and drying up to my wound in there, because, you know, they're dealing with some kid who's got worms or something. And and I'm just sitting there in the emergency room, who I want to sue for false advertisement, because nothing's ever treated like an emergency. I sat there so long that my thumb was now floating in a bag of water like a goldfish. I just wanted a carnival. And the punchline here is basically the doctor ended up wrapping it up and throwing my thumb out, wrapping it up in gauze, putting Neosporin on it, and I ended up paying $500 for an emergency room visit for something that would have cost me probably $10 in Neosporin and Band-Aids at a Walgreens. But anyway, I started, I tell you that story because that started the basis for what my album was going to be called, because I started doing shows right away, and I had this huge bandage that I was bleeding through on stage, and so I had to kind of tell people the makeshift story of what happened. It wasn't even a bit. I was just explaining to him what was happening. And and as I was telling people after the show, some guy came up to me and he's like, "Hey man, you should be glad it was just the tip of your thumb. It could be worse. It could have been your whole thumb." And then the whole "it could be worse" thing just resonated with me, because that's how we are in this country. Everything, it could be worse. Don't feel bad about that, because it could be worse. Don't worry about getting fired. Some people didn't have any jobs at all. It could be worse. You might never have had a job. At least you got unemployment. And people are always trying to spin positives from negative situations. And sometimes it's okay for things just to suck. And so I decided right then and there my album was going to be called "It Could Be Worse." And over the course of the next 3 months, I started to turn this guacamole story into a little bit of a bit for the stage. And I'll play that clip for you here. Here we go.
They give you the other phrase. This one comes about all the time now. "It could be worse." You hear this stupid shit? "It could be worse." This is optimism at its finest. When something bad happens to you and you're upset about it, and somebody just steps in and goes, "No, don't feel bad about that. It could be worse." Then they present the scenario of just how much worse it could get, as if that's supposed to cheer you up. Here's an example. I was making guacamole a couple months ago, and I was cutting the avocado. There's a trick to get the pit out. If you slam the knife in the pit, it rips right out, right? Well, I'm an idiot, and when I did it, the avocado flipped, the knife took a turn, and chopped off the tip of my left thumb. It went flying across the counter, bloodshot everywhere. I wound up in the emergency room. They couldn't sew it back on. I bled through the gauze for 2 days. Now I got a stupid-looking thumb for the rest of my life. I was telling somebody about it, and he looked me right in the eyes, and he goes, "Well, hey, man, you're lucky. Be glad it was just a tip. It could be worse. It could have been your whole thumb." Fuck you. Same guy. "If I had cut off my whole thumb, then you're lucky. It's just your thumb. It could be worse. It could have been your whole hand." Yeah. "And then it could have been my whole arm. I'm supposed to just keep chopping off limbs so there's nothing left of me but a torso before you finally accept that this sucks? Sometimes situations are just bad as is, shithead. We don't have to extrapolate everything to make things as bad as they can be. We can play this fucking game all day. This thing would never end with a guy like you. We'd be out to dinner and my steak is a little undercooked. Boy, hey, you should be glad it's cooked at all. It could be worse. Some countries, they don't even cook it. They eat it and barf it back all over the place. All right, I'll take it.
I just want to get out for a little bit and clear my head because me and my wife just got divorced. You should be glad you just got divorced. It could be worse. Your wife could have beat you. Actually, my wife did beat me. Well, be glad she just beat you. It could be worse. You could have chopped off your dick and thrown it down the hallway. No, actually, she did that. Well, be glad it was your dick. It could be worse. She could have been cheating on you, holding someone else's dick and fucking herself with that when you weren't home. Be glad she was faithful.
So you get to hear the bit, and that bit was recorded at the Skyline Comedy Cafe in Appleton, Wisconsin, in November of 2010. And that was coincidentally my first time headlining there as well. And that bit evolved even more over the course of the next year, and I added more exaggeration, more story to it, and I really kind of built it out, and it became a nice staple of my act for a while. But you get to hear the beginnings of it as I started to kind of find the funny in a shitty situation, and that's what comedians do. Something shitty happens in our life, we'll usually share it on stage in some form up front just to talk through it, and then over time it ends up becoming humor. The old adage is tragedy plus time equals comedy, and in this case that was the case. Once my thumb had healed up a little bit, I was able to kind of look back and find some of the funny moments in it, and I was able to pull some humor out of it. But so as I started kind of building my act for It Could Be Worse, I knew that was going to be my third album, which I was wanting to release in 2012. And I never got around to doing that. When we come back from the break from our sponsor here, I will share with you why. All right, so before I get into why I didn't record it, let's talk about some of the material that I was piecing together for the album. So I kind of went back and looked at some of the archives that I've got, and I was looking to see what was this album gonna be comprised of. And so I listened to a couple of the shows in prep for this podcast, and so it looks like I was kicking off my shows at the time in 2010, 2011 with a bit about spending my day on Wikipedia. And I was talking about the Wikipedia death trap, where you start out in one spot and then you end up 15 pages deep about something that you never even thought about looking up to begin with. So it's like, okay, I'm looking up, the NFL playoffs. So I'm looking up, Tom Brady. Oh, Tom Brady. Brady plays for the Patriots. Click into the Patriots. The movie The Patriot. Oh, that was a good movie. Click into the Patriot. Oh, Mel Gibson. Okay, click into Mel Gibson. What, he hates the Jews? What's that about? Click into that. What, the Holocaust? The Nazis? And before you know it, I'm reading like a 4-page article about and filling out an application to become a member of the Third Reich. And it was just talking about that circling the drain mentality of Wikipedia, where you just wind up 8 hours later on something going, how the fuck did I get here? And so that's how I was kicking off my shows at the time. And it was never groundbreaking. I've heard other comedians do variations of it since. But at the time, that's how I was starting my shows. And it was a decent way to start the shows because everybody could relate to it. And then I would move into talking about condoms. And I don't know how the transition or segues happened, but I remember the whole bit was centered around how they should change the name of condoms to dream catchers. And I loved that line. And so I was forcing it into everything I possibly could and trying to figure out a bit around it. I wrote that line and tried building out a bit backwards around it. And from what I was able to hear, I don't think I ever really accomplished that goal of finding a good bit about it. But it was a funny line. And I wanted it because I wanted to sell a T-shirt that had a condom, but instead of like the rubbered latex coming off the circle end of the condom, I wanted it to be a dream catcher. And I thought that would have been a hilarious shirt at the time. And I never got around to selling it, but I do have the mock-up artwork that I did do at the time where I was going to go do it. From there, I was moving into just a segment about stupid people, and which has been a constant theme of mine over time. And in this particular instance, I was talking about the TV show A Thousand Ways to Die. And it was, I don't even know if it's still on or if anybody would remember it, but it was a semi-popular show at the time where they just talked about the dumbest ways that people have died. And I talked about one where where a guy was he hired some secretary to start, and it was her first day on the job, and he brought her into his office and he wanted to show her how unbreakable the window in his office was. And so he started he chucked baseballs against it, he was whacking it with golf clubs, just showing her that it doesn't break. And then just to put the cherry on the sundae, he went running across the room to jump into the window. And he's in a sky rise, by the way, and he goes to jump into the window just to show her how unbreakable it is. But he had a diamond encrusted watch on, and at the angle that he jumped into the window, his watch hit the window and he just fell right out the fucking window to his death. And I remember the joke of that, aside from the buildup of the story, was just talking about that was that lady's first day on the job. And, you know, like, talk about your craziest first day on a job ever. This lady got to watch her boss literally go running through a fucking plate glass window, and now she's the new CEO. From there, I talked about a story I read about a bum that was sleeping in a dumpster, and he woke up because a garbage truck came by, picked up the garbage can, dumped him into the back of the garbage truck, and started compacting him. And it was in retrospect, as I'm saying this back now, it's just more of a mean-spirited bit. Not that everything has to be nice and on the up and up, but it was really just laughing at the expense of a bum. There was no heroic tale at the end where I'm defending the homeless person. But the crux of the story was how good of a sleep was this guy getting that he didn't feel like a garbage truck come by, clamp on the can, lift him up, you know, hear going beep beep beep. Like, no wonder this guy's homeless. He wouldn't wake up for a fucking alarm clock if he had a job. And so that was like the basis of that. But and those two pieces together, 1,000 Ways to Die and Bum in a Dumpster, when I look back now, I can remember some audiences would be into it, but there was audiences that would be turned off by, like, why do you keep celebrating people's deaths? Why is that like a theme right now? And that type of material would be okay if I had any, you know, real good bits or ammo behind it, but they were both just kind of scratching the surface, didn't really go anywhere with it, just laughing at somebody else's expense. So you know, happy to scratch those. And then of course I had my It Could Be Worse bit, where I would talk about this guacamole incident, and I would follow up It Could Be Worse with my second phrase that I hate, I can't complain. And I ended up parlaying that thought into my next album, which would be called No Complaints. At the time, I was doing about a 5 to 6 minute bit on a girl named Rebecca Black, and she recorded a song called Friday, and it was fucking annoying. And I'll play you just a little bit of the bit that I did.
Time to lower your expectations in life. The days of being happy because it's Friday are gone. Those days are behind. And TGI Friday, fuck you, Friday. How many people now have to work Saturdays in a shitty economy because the job market sucks? Yeah, you happy about Friday? Fuck Friday. I'll take a Tuesday every now and again now. I don't give a shit about Friday. Friday is not important enough to be writing songs about anymore. This stupid song that's out there now, Friday, Friday. This is Rebecca Black. Who's heard that song? Clap if you've heard that song. Here's the scoop for those of you that haven't heard this song. There's this 13-year-old girl out of California. Her name's Rebecca Black. She records a video for this song that was written for her, and it's called Friday. And it's this god-awful, annoying, piece of shit song. And it's extremely catchy. She records this video and they put it up on YouTube and it gets like 1,000 hits. It's not really that big of a deal. But then a comedian named Daniel Tosh, who has a show on Comedy Central called Tosh.0, goes on their great show. He pulls up the video and he plays it and he just bashes this video, just shreds this thing for how horrific it is, and it's hilarious. But he's got millions of followers, so what do? They run right onto YouTube and start watching this video, and the fucking thing goes viral. At the last count, it had over 160 million hits to it. She's getting paid per visit to it now. It's sponsored. It's endorsed. It's a number one seller on iTunes. She's in a video with Katy Perry. She's got a new single out, a record deal, a new album coming out. And with it, she's making money hand over fist. And what this song is about is this 13-year-old girl's life and how happy she is because it's Friday. Geodish Friday, gotta get down on Friday. What the fuck does a 13-year-old know about getting down on Friday? What is the big thing when you're 13 on Friday? Hamburgers and hand jobs? That's not a get down on Friday. That's a marriage with kids if you're lucky.
So that was just a minor piece of this, and if you don't know the whole backstory on this girl, go Wikipedia her. Rebecca Black, she made this terrible music video, and Daniel Tosh ripped on it on his show, and then the song went viral, and she ended up making a ton of money from it for no reason, and it's just me being the whole point of this joke was that I'm a jealous maniac of you know, and at the end I reveal that I bought the song because I like the song. But that was it was a fun rant at the time. It was topical. It would have worked, but probably today having that on an album wouldn't have held up anyway. So maybe for the best. I had a strong bit at the time about cyberbullying, which I've since changed my views on. But I talked about how you know, it was a comparison of being, I wish I was cyberbullied, because back in my day, and I talked about that, and I fucking hate the back in my day comparisons, and I don't think cyberbullying is anything to actually take lightly. So it's a bit that, you know, I wouldn't do anymore, and I don't agree with myself anymore of how I wrote it. But it had a couple funny punchlines at the time when it was a little bit more relevant and newer. I had a bit that I really did like called "I Wish I Was Fat," and I felt like I was on the right side of this argument. This was actually more in line with where I would end up in my writing as time went on, where I would defend those versus making fun of those. Those meaning like those less fortunate, those weaker, those that I want to stand up and believe in. I'm not picking on easy targets anymore. I'm taking the opposite angle, and I'm going to defend that point of it. And so this was all about how people make fun of fat people a lot, but I you know, saying, you know, fat people must have low self-esteem, and I was flipping that around saying I think fat people have the most self-esteem, because to know that if I eat this I get fat, and then to still eat that and be okay looking like that, I think that is such high self-esteem that I don't give a fuck what anybody thinks about me. Like, I wish I was fat. You ever see a fat person at a buffet? You've never seen somebody so happy in your life. I would kill to be that happy and not be this shallow, miserable prick that I am. You know, up at 5:30 in the morning on an elliptical, sweating my ass off, hating my life, and fat people are home sleeping. Who wouldn't wish to be like that? And I really leaned into that bit heavily and talked about how that's what I was trying to be in my life, was now that I'm married, I'm going to try and get fat. And it wasn't comedy gold, but it was a fun rant at the time. It got some laughs, and I felt like my writing was shifting into the right direction. I had a bit about the TV show called 16 and Pregnant, and you know, again, it was written more out of mean-spirited jokes versus this is how I actually feel about it. There was some good opinion in there, but I felt like I hit the wrong end of the target on that. And then the closing of my of this hour that I was working on, I really liked, and I actually really felt I was on the right side of most of it. I had a real poignant piece on how we treat special ed children in this country, and the bit did not make fun of special ed kids. The bit actually defended them to the end, and the bit ripped on how shitty we treat them, how shitty other kids are, how shitty adults are when it comes to that. And I had such great points. It was the first time I used that unknowingly at the time, but I used that defense lawyer point of view in terms of how I wanted to defend this. And so much so that at countless shows, I had people come up to me after the show and say, I want to really thank you for doing that bit. You know, our child is, you know, has special needs, or, you know, our child, you know, has a disability like this. And the way you were defending it, the way you were talking about it, is how we feel. And I just want to thank you for voicing that. It's important that people hear that. And I heard that so often. I never heard anybody with a special needs child come up to me after that bit saying that I shouldn't be doing that bit or telling me that bit was negative. It all came from a positive place, and I could only compare it to the gay marriage routine on my new album, Vincectomy. I've had countless shows over the past 2 years where parents of children who have come out have come up to me and thanked me for you know, defending them in that bit, saying, you know, it's a tough life they lead, and to have people voice their opinions on it and be a voice and be a spokesman for them, you know, in a positive format was really appreciated. However, in both situations, in the special needs bit and in the gay marriage bit, I did have plenty of people walk out of my show in those bits. And sometimes for the special needs bit, and I can't blame people for assuming this, but people assumed the second I said special needs that I was going to rip on them versus defend them, and they didn't even stick around to hear my point. And based on the rest of my act, talking about people dying and laughing about it, I don't think they were wrong for that assumption at the time, but they didn't get to stick around to hear the bit, so they would leave, and that would make me look like a piece of shit on stage until I was able to get the whole bit out and then shine through, you know, the other way. But with the gay marriage bit, I had plenty of walkouts over the past 2 years. One show in particular, I had 20 people walk out in the middle of it, and in the middle of that bit in particular. And these are people who just didn't, you know, share the same views as me, and that bit riled them up enough to get them to leave. And it was my closing bit, so they stuck around for 55 minutes of my act, and the final five, they'd get up and walk out of my show. But this special needs bit was the first time I experienced that kind of gratification of people thanking me for being on the right side of something on stage. And then I had an 11-minute killer closer about rehab, you know, alcohol rehab, drug rehab, gambling rehab. And that was the first time on stage I shared that I had a gambling problem. And then I had a piece where I branched off of it talking about how the world should be run. Things aren't run the way they should be run. If things were run the way they should be run, then people's convictions were held. It wouldn't take some guy stealing his own memorabilia before they finally arrested him for murdering his wife. And I had some great points in this long-winded rant, and I wrapped the whole thing up talking about born-again virgins. And that's a piece that I've tried to resurrect over the years, is that last piece of it, Born Again Virgins. It did so well, but it needed a piece at the beginning of that 11-minute closing rant. It needed a piece that I did at the beginning to call back to at the end, which really tied the whole thing together. And my views have shifted on rehab from what I thought about it when I was 28 years old to now when I'm 37. So that kind of ruins that closer for me, because I don't share the same, even though it was a great piece at the time. I have shifted views on my views of rehab, and now that bit just wouldn't make sense anymore in doing it, because I don't believe in the same thing anymore. So and then I had a couple other bits that I had sprinkled in that were going to be, you know, either be worked in or saved for something else. And I had secured a deal in 2012, in mid 2012, with Rooftop Records, and they were going to record my album, but they wanted me to record it at one of the clubs where they have camera equipment already set up, and I just couldn't get a place that had that equipment to book me in a reasonable amount of time. Otherwise, I would have recorded this album in the summer of 2012, and I was getting booked at a place to go do it to get it recorded. And then I got sick in November of 2012. I was misdiagnosed with cancer, and I don't want to leave it on a cliffhanger, but go check out episode 3 of my podcast archives to hear the full story on being misdiagnosed with cancer. And so after I got sick, I started, you know, when I came back on stage after about a 3-month hiatus, I started doing some material about me being sick, and I started to transition away from a lot of the darker content that I had been doing that was going to comprise It Could Be Worse. And my act was getting good responses on the road throughout touring on It Could Be Worse, but it was too negative. And once I came out of the hospital, out of that situation of thinking I was going to die, I felt my act was just too negative, and I felt like a darker person when I would do it. Now, to be clear, I don't consider myself to be an uplifting comedian today. I still rant and bitch and complain and moan, but I feel like my act has evolved to where I'm on the right side of arguments, defending points that I believe in, versus just writing jokes at any expense just because they're funny. And that's been the big progression and growth over the past, you know, 7 years of my act. And as I started to go, hey, I don't want to be this dark person on stage. The passion behind the material of It Could Be Worse started to fizzle, and I was no longer able to deliver it with the same intensity and beliefs and humor as I was, you know, the year prior. And so, just as fast as the material and the passion behind it was fizzling, that was as fast as my new ideas were coming as well. So I ended up regrouping and using 2013 as a regrouping year, and I kept a couple select pieces from It Could Be Worse that would show up on my next album in early 2014 called No Complaints. And you can go get that album on my website, vincecarone.com, or it's on iTunes, Pandora, Spotify. Go check it out. It was the first album I was I feel proud of, and there's some pieces on it that I don't like. I used some bits from It Could Be Worse on it. So the bits that I carried over were 16 and Pregnant, I Wish I Was Fat, and Cyberbullying. I ended up with those on No Complaints, and over time I've wished that I didn't include those, because if you go listen to my album and you listen to those three bits, they all seem out of place and like I forced their way into the album, and that's because I did. It's because they were written before I wrote the rest of No Complaints, and I forced them in, whereas if I would have just pulled those three, my No Complaints album would have been about 10 minutes shorter, but it would have told a congruent story and the material would have flowed a lot better. So, you know, it's a regret I have, but I'll live with it. And now, you know, the bits get laughs, you know, the bits are funny, but they just don't fit the context of that album. And so, you know, for me, you know, the bummer part about all this is all these years later, I hate that I have this 4 to 5 year gap between my albums, Thanks for the Clap and No Complaints. But it just didn't feel right in 2012, 2013 to rush and record an album that I just didn't feel passionate about anymore. So as you've heard a couple of the bits now, I still have plenty of footage and recordings from It Could Be Worse from that era. And I might send it to a sound guy one day and get it polished up and released. But as of right now, that album remains the album that never got released. So what's coming up for me this upcoming week? We're done with the segment on It Could Be Worse. Let's talk about what's coming up for me this upcoming weekend, Friday and Saturday, the 10th and 11th. I will be performing in Houghton, Michigan, or Baraga, Michigan, one of those two towns. They're right next to each other. A funny comedian named Ben Hamilton and I will be hitting the road together, traveling from Illinois about 6 hours north into the UP of Michigan, which we will actually go through Wisconsin for. And I was at this room back in maybe January of 2016, and so it's been 4 years since I've been there. So I've actually probably gotten 2 hours of material that they haven't heard out there. So I might, I'll be giving them, working in some of the new stuff that's started to take shape, but I'll also probably still be using quite a bit from Vincectomy. But the fun part now that I've recorded Vincectomy is I can kind of go pull from a couple different albums if I want and kind of start to mix and match some material, which I can have some fun with. I look forward to that. I just got the first mix back of Vincectomy earlier today, so I've been listening to it, and it sounds pretty good out of the gate. Not gonna be a whole lot of changes I need. There's a couple of volume pieces I have to take care of and have my editor go back and make a couple minor adjustments, but it's sounding pretty good. And then I've got another record company, label. That I'm talking to about maybe putting it out. So we'll see if that takes shape. I might be, the album might be delayed a little bit if I end up getting it put onto a label. But if I do it myself, it'll be out by the end of January online. Next week's podcast, tune in. I'm going to talk about my time on the internet hit So You Have a Girlfriend. And this is a pretty popular relationship advice internet show that I was a part of. And I was the comedic relief of it. But this was three guys, three girls, all in their 20s, giving relationship advice on a variety of topics. And you can go check it out online at soyouhaveagirlfriend.com. It's still out there, but we haven't done anything with it video wise in probably 6 years at this point. But I might bring on the creator of that show, Joe Martin. If I can get a hold of him next week, I'll have him come on and join me for a little bit. Otherwise, I'll just talk to you about it myself and talk to you about how it all came to be and or the controversial pieces of it and what the upcoming plans are for it. So make sure you get to my website and sign up for my mailing list. That's so important. And if you do, you can actually get a video right now. I've got a video that you get upon clicking submit. You will get access to a video on material that is not going to be on my upcoming album and has not been released before. So you can go check that video out. Subscribe to my YouTube channel, like my Facebook page, follow me on Instagram and Twitter, all those at Vince Carone. And go read my blogs and sign up for my RSS feed on my website. Lots of content coming. That is one of my big goals this year, is to bring content to you constantly in all forms, because content is king. I will talk to you next week.